Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Lopes on Movies. My name is Joey, and today I am joined by the one, the only Kyle.
Hey, how's it going?
And the one, the only Mark.
Hello.
So, how you doing today, guys? You ready for this this new episode of the show?
Oh, you know it.
I woke up ready.
That's great. That's great to hear, because we got a lot to talk about today, guys. So, the movie that we saw, Parasite, we'll be getting to that in the second half of this episode. But for right now, we want to start with a little bit of movie news and updates. So, first thing, literally a minute before we were starting to record this podcast, or this radio show, I should say.
Whichever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Martin Scorsese released an op-ed in the New York Times called, "I Said Marvel Movies Aren't Cinema. Let Me Explain." So, I mean, that's crazy. Yeah, you know, right before we're about to record this episode, and you know, we all agreed earlier we were done talking about the Martin Scorsese controversy. He releases this bombshell. So obviously,
yeah, this show is just like we're just littered with synchronicity here. Yeah, it's all the Renner stuff. It's
wild,
crazy.
So this drops. So obviously, we have to stop everything and read this. We're not going to get into it in depth because honestly, like, none of us are going to be capable of doing this article justice at all. But all I will say is that I think this is probably the most important piece of writing on the current state of the film industry ever written. And
apparently, you get one free New York Times article a month. I highly recommend you make this your one.
Yeah, make it this one, man. Like, I encourage everybody to look this up and read it. And like, regardless of how you feel about the Marvel movies, like, if nothing else, I think this really clarifies his position on the whole thing in a way that I think is both fair and really thoughtful. So I really encourage everybody to check this out, and hopefully this will end the whole controversy. But it won't. I mean, it won't. There's still going to be...
Hear that, fanboys? Put down those pitchforks and give this a read.
Or better yet, just go see The Irishman.
Yeah, go see The Irishman. Mark, you saw The Irishman. Me and Kyle haven't seen it yet, but obviously we are both...
Oh, but don't worry, I got my Netflix account all set up.
I will say this. Go see The Irishman if you can do that.
We will talk about The Irishman next week once me and Kyle have gotten a chance to see it. Needless to say,
I'm sure the opinion will entirely flip by the time that happens. They're both going
to
call me a fraud. They're going to be like, why did you send me to this movie?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think I have a pretty good feeling about The Irishman. I'm just going to throw that out there. All right, let's get to the next little bit of movie news. And this is something that I think is kind of funny. So if you remember from a few months ago, this is probably over the summer, the showrunners of Game of Thrones, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, were announced to be directing a new trilogy of Star Wars films. And just recently, I think as early as last week, it was announced that they have left that project and are no longer going to be working on these movies. So it's such a shame. They both them and Kathleen Kennedy of Lucasfilm cited the reason as scheduling issues. Which
hey, scheduling's hard.
Scheduling is tough.
They were just both going to a couple of parties and they just
man,
I just can't make it to Star Wars.
They're spending so much time in their post Game of Thrones bunker that they just
I checked a couple of weekends and I just can't make the shoot that day.
I can't squeeze you in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just don't think it's gonna happen. So needless to say, that's obviously not why they left the Star Wars movies. So according to a report from The Hollywood Reporter, the situation was considerably less simple than that. So first of all, apparently Kathleen Kennedy wasn't very happy with the $250 million Netflix deal that they just signed, Benioff and Weiss. So understandably, it would probably
be... In a way,
be
that's
difficult.
Kind of them saying that, like, Disney was telling them that you're too busy for us.
Yeah,
apparently.
Exactly. Well, when you sign like that big of a deal with Netflix and you're supposed to be making three Star Wars movies, I could understand, you know, being a little bit nervous about that.
Makes sense.
But the other reason cited by The Hollywood Reporter and their anonymous sources was that Benioff and Weiss were evidently nervous about the toxic fandom of Star Wars.
That's not making it any easier.
So particularly after the negative reception to the end of Game of Thrones, honestly, like, I don't blame the guys if that's the reason. Like, it's just imagine going from the end of Game of Thrones, which everyone hated, and then making a Star Wars movie, which everyone will probably hate.
Yeah.
Like, you would alienate two giant fan bases. Like, you would, like, could you imagine, like, living with that? That would be terrible.
It's kind of amusing in a way, though.
It is a little amusing.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely amusing.
Nonetheless, these guys, I think, made the right call to distance themselves from Star Wars. But the funny thing is that them doing that kind of put Star Wars in a little bit of a tough situation, because those three movies were scheduled for, I think, 2022, 2024, whatever. You know, they had them on the docket.
And it didn't sound like they had them very far along either. So
no, they
like
didn't.
They could just pick it up and hash it out.
Yeah, exactly. But the point was, like, they had a plan for Star Wars. Like, it was a vague plan, but they had a plan. Now they don't have a plan. Because when Rise of Skywalker, whatever it's called, comes out in December, that's it. Like, they have, like, their TV series on Disney Plus, but in terms of, like, theatrical Star Wars releases, they got nothing right now. Like, they have no plans except for this alleged Rian Johnson trilogy, which I think everyone is just counting the days till that's canceled.
I mean, you know, with how The Last Jedi was, everybody's real happy about that. I'm sure they're real excited for Rian Johnson to dive right back in.
Hey,
into
some
Star
people
Wars.
Love that.
Some people, sure. It's needless to say, The Last Jedi was a divisive film.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
So regardless of, you know, some people like it, many people despise it. I think Disney is not in the business of putting out divisive entertainment. So I don't think that Rian Johnson is somebody that they will really be interested in working with long term.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let me just pose this question to you, because I have my own theory. How long until that Rian Johnson trilogy is canceled?
Oh, man, I give it an over of maybe, like, you want to let this news dissipate, right? So maybe Q1 next year, no more than 6 months.
I actually said pretty much the same thing before summer 2020. I think, because the thing is, like, Disney needs to announce their future plans for Star Wars movies pretty soon, I would think, because The Rise of Skywalker is coming out soon. So if they don't have anything, you know, announced, like, the fanboys are going to, you know, revolt or something. I mean, you know, these Disney Plus TV series aren't going to satiate the rabid fans that the Disney audience has, or Disney's courted.
Have you seen that Mandalorian trailer?
No, I haven't, actually.
Oh, well, then there you go.
But
I don't know anything about that show.
Yeah, I actually have avoided
it's about the Mandalorian.
It is about the Mandalorian, that is true.
Speculation. Who's even left? Who can direct?
They're just going to do what they always do. They're going to look for some new rising talent and prop them up. Let me step back, because there is one other thing. The darling of Marvel himself, Kevin Feige, was announced semi-recently that he was going to be working on a Star Wars project. So my gut is that Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm and Disney really want to put all their eggs in his basket because of just how successful he's been with Marvel. Because really, if you think about it, like, these Star Wars movies that Disney has done have been really, like, hit or miss for the company financially. Like, just even disregarding, like, how audiences have responded to them or whatever. They haven't performed as well as I think Disney was hoping.
I don't think they expected them to do like this.
No, and they've been very creatively confused, and nobody really knows what's going on. It feels like they don't know what to do with Star Wars.
Okay, I have a real long shot, but I think this might play out. I have a guy. I have a dark horse guy.
Okay.
Who knows Star Wars pretty well.
Okay.
I think they're going to bring back George.
Oh, man.
You know, what if they did, though, actually? I came up with that just now.
That would be the best thing ever.
I was going to say, if I have been absolutely done with Star Wars ever since I saw The Force Awakens and was so disgusted by it that I had to be done. If it were me and I was Disney right now, I would say, all right, we're going to make these TV series. We'll see how they go. But otherwise, we're done. No more Star Wars. Like,
just period.
Because I am so sick of just seeing, like, the reanimated corpse of this franchise, like staying alive, like Weekend at Bernie's style, by these incompetent people. Like, I just want it to be done. I just want to stop seeing Star Wars and stop having to talk about Star Wars with people.
But Joey, if George came back.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So if they said, okay, we recognize that what we did with Star Wars was a little bit divisive to people and a little bit creatively bankrupt. I would say completely creatively bankrupt, but you know, whatever
we'll
they want to say.
Just give them the, yeah.
Whatever they want to say. George,
let them hedge it.
We're going to give you back Star Wars, and we're going to let you do whatever you want. Just like the prequels. I'm sold.
I am 100% there day one.
Sign
I swear.
Me up. Sign oh me up God. For Phantom Menace 2. I am in the theater.
It would be refreshing, frankly.
It would be refreshing, right? Like, we spent all this time like hating on the prequels because they're garbage. But then the alternative, and they are garbage, but the alternative that we got instead is like the lifeless husk of the former Star Wars movies and whatever The Last Jedi was. I don't even know what that was.
At least they were, God, I hate to be the prequel apologist guy, but were they at least interesting trash? I kind of think so.
Oh, yeah, but they were all new.
Like, they made your brain hurt.
Yeah.
But you also, it was like a train
interesting
wreck.
Might be too far, but you know, yes.
They were at the very least, like the thing that I always say, and this annoys people when I say it, but the way that I see it, the Star Wars prequels are garbage, but at least they're art. They were made by an artist who had a vision and tried to do something new. It's not like these new Disney Star Wars movies where they're basically just curating a brand and creating fan service.
Man, like, at least they're like they're bad enough in a way that's interesting that like to me, I actually prefer the dialogue scenes. I can stand watching through awful alien like literal space alien stuff that George Lucas writes all day. It is
fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I mean, I never thought that I would live in a world where like I would have anything positive to say about the Star Wars prequels. But in this like these dismal times with this lifeless husk of the Star Wars franchise just hobbling along, like I long for the days of I don't like sand.
I knew it was gonna be that line.
You might be talking a little crazy, guys.
Have we gone off the deep end? I think we might have.
In a way, but you know, in another way, it's kind of like saying I wish Tommy Wiseau would make more movies.
Sure, a little bit, but
it's in that ballpark.
Credit to George Lucas, what he was doing with the Star Wars prequels, at least he was trying to advance film technology in a way, and you could say like that's not necessarily a good thing because like he basically pioneered all digital filmmaking, which for better or worse is like kind of the world we're living in now. But he was trying something new with those movies. Like he was
trying to do unique stuff.
He did. So I respect those movies a lot more than I respect anything that J.J. Abrams has ever done with his life.
Side note: I'm sure at least some people have probably, most people have heard of this by now, but it's well worth going and watching the behind-the-scenes documentary for The Phantom Menace.
Oh,
in a way that's actually a much, much better movie than the actual movie turned out to be.
Oh, yeah, it's fascinating.
You will have, it's really compelling. Yeah. Really compelling stuff.
Definitely track that down. I think it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube.
But, I think that's all we got to say about Star Wars. Because if I talk about Star Wars any longer, I'm going to start getting a headache.
We're kind of breaking our whole new positive direction.
In a way, that was positive.
I guess we were complimenting those prequels.
I think about
the most positive thing you could say.
All right, let's step away from this, guys. We have a movie to talk about, and yes, I'm actually looking forward to talking about this one. So, all of us saw the new film Parasite. So, Mark, if you would please give us a synopsis of this film.
All unemployed, a lower-class family takes peculiar interest in the lives of a wealthy and glamorous upper-class family until they get entangled in an unexpected incident. It is a Korean film directed by Bong Joon-ho, who is well-known in the West for the films The Host, Snowpiercer, and most recently Okja, a direct-to-Netflix film. Joey, would you like to talk about it a little bit?
Sure, I'd love to. So before we really like get into the movie, I just want to ask, did either of you guys have any idea what this was about before going into it?
No, I thought it was going to be about a real actual non-metaphorical parasite.
Right? Like, I was expecting, like, a, you know, like some kind of, like, disease or evil.
Well, like, one of the summaries says that, like, when a man gets infected with an unexpected parasite or something, so I was like...
Wait, really?
Yeah. Well, that's... I thought it was, like, a more straightforward horror thing.
Okay. That is undoubtedly...
Are you sure you didn't read the wrong parasite?
No, I'm 100% sure that's what it says on the IMDb page when you look it up, and the little, like, stub before you click on the link says something like that.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I was so confused.
Well, somebody made a mistake.
Or purposefully did it. They're throwing you off the track.
Well, I will say, so I didn't know anything about it either, like, going in. But in some ways, I think that's kind of the best way to go into it, because it was really delightful for me, like, discovering all of the... what it was ultimately about, and, like, seeing all the unexpected places that it goes. So I think just because I want to give people, you know, give you guys the opportunity to have that experience, let's just give our recommendations before we get into the movie. I think we all would agree, like, you should go see Parasite. This is a great movie.
Oh, yes,
this is a great
definitely.
Movie.
It's really interesting.
You might not be able to, but you should definitely try to.
Yeah. Like, the closest theater nearby is playing, I think, is in Brandywine. But hopefully it'll be on video for you guys to see.
And who knows how much longer it's going to be up there.
Yeah, so.
It's well, like, up there with any of the compelling suspense movies that you'd care to name. It's really good.
Yeah, it's very much worth seeing. So if you're kind of, like, you know, a bit of a spoiler phobe, and you don't want to hear anything more about it before you see it, then, you know, just trust us, it's very worth seeing. But if you want to know a little bit more about it, we'll do our best to avoid, like, outright spoilers. And you know, like, we won't spoil the big twist in, like, the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
We'll just kind of talk about it more vaguely. So, Mark, you mentioned the synopsis of the movie, but that's very vague, and it doesn't really explain that much. So I'm going to give a little bit more detail about what the movie's kind of about. So the basic premise of the movie is that we're following this lower class family's series of deceptions, basically, where they're essentially faking their way into doing jobs for a rich family to leech money off of them, like, you know, a parasite. It's so metaphorical, as one of the main characters of the movie is saying.
Yeah.
So the movie sets this up from the very beginning, which I think is kind of clever. Like, the first thing we see is the members of this family, like, trying to find an unprotected Wi-Fi network to leech off of their, like, neighbors and neighboring businesses. So right from the get-go, like, that's sort of in the back of your head.
And the other thing they set up is that they're decent enough to get by at odd jobs, but they're also, they leave big holes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like both of those things at once. It's just, it's kind of great. They just set it straight up, like, right off the bat. But I guess the point is, like, it does look on a surface level like they're doing a good enough job once they finally get in with this family, but clearly there's something else going on too, and they're also faking it.
Yeah. So, like, later on, the son of the family, Ki-Woo, is recommended by a college student friend of his to be an English tutor for this rich family's high school age daughter, right? And from the second he gets into this family's inner circle, he starts working them to get the rest of his family somehow involved in this operation. So, for example, he sees that the rich family's son paints, like, their young son. So he convinces the very gullible mother to hire an art teacher named Jessica, who is actually his sister, Ki-Young.
Yep.
And long story short, eventually the whole family gets involved in the scam, and they're all, like, working for this rich family. So there's some really interesting twists that happen later on that I'm not going to get into. But that's the basic premise. So essentially, to get an idea for what this movie is, it's essentially a dark comedy slash, like, thriller. And it's really fundamentally about class conflict and the difference between, like, upper class and lower class people and how they interact. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the basic idea.
I liked that there weren't particularly, like, it doesn't moralize, really. Like, the both sides of this whole thing, they're not exactly good people, or they're probably definitely not good people, but they're not, neither of them are really bad people either.
It
doesn't go all the way in and say, and, like, stigmatize or like really go in and be like, I don't know, like the rich family is obviously evil. They're actually kind of sympathetic for most of the movie.
Yeah, that's really then, like the big thing that to me with the movie, it's the moral ambiguity. And actually, that's like the director Bong Joon-ho from an interview with Vanity Fair, he had this to say: in this film, it's very difficult to separate the good ones from the bad ones.
Yeah.
Even the rich characters are not your conventional, typical greedy villains.
No, they're just kind of dumb mostly, really. Although the kid's obviously very perceptive, like that's like one of the major points of like where the suspense hinges around, because he's the one that's got enough to like actually key in on what their scam is. But but even though they're all con artists and they're kind of jerks, they still seem to work pretty hard. But they're also like just when you're about to really hate them, they turn it around. Like they make it so that. Like, you're like, yeah, okay, it's a really desperate situation. I can understand why that they did what they did to try and get by or get something a little more comfortable. And then the overall just arc of the movie, the building into the third act and the ending is just, it's incredible. It's just, man, so in a way... I don't want to talk too much about this, but I had come off, this was a double feature basically for me after The Irishman, and it's a pretty crazy thing to say that this is like, this was a decent follow-up act. Like, it was enough that I wasn't, I mean, I don't want to say too much, but it could have been a lot worse. Like, anything is going to come down a little bit off of that. But this was super compelling, and I just couldn't, like, I couldn't pull myself away from it, I guess.
Yes, yes, no, I completely agree. Like it's the one of those. The moral ambiguity, it kind of, the funny thing is, you remember the movie we saw earlier this year, Ready or Not? That was also a movie about, like, essentially class conflict. But the difference in that one is that, you know, that
they're
that
all
is
mustache.
Like, the rich people are essentially evil monsters with no depth to them whatsoever. And that can be fun, right? Like, but it's also like the easiest way to deal with a class conflict story is just, you know, rich people bad, lower
just
class,
make them
good,
cartoon
whatever.
Villains. Although not all of them were in that. Like, they had enough, but it was kind of more on the erring of the side of, like, either they had a heart of gold at the center of it, or they were just like, I'm so rich, I'm so evil.
I mean, really, the interesting thing to me is that in Parasite, like, it isn't quite accurate to say that the opposite is true, where, like, the rich people are good and the lower class
are
bad.
The more scheming ones.
The line between right and wrong here is very, very blurry. Like, the lead family's actions are basically, like, completely ethically irredeemable. But
like, and the rich family doesn't actually do anything wrong at all.
No, like the thing
they're just trying to live their lives.
The thing that's interesting about the rich family is that the only thing they're guilty of is ignorance. Like, there are moments where they come off as a little elitist, but they seem like essentially decent people. Like, especially the mother, who's so gullible and innocent that, like, you feel genuinely bad
she's
for
so
her.
Nice
the whole time.
Too. Yeah, you just feel sorry for.
Like,
her
she
the
doesn't
whole
deserve
time.
What's happening.
You feel
to her.
Sorry, especially the maid.
You feel for both sides of the family.
You do, And I think the director, he puts it this way in another interview with GQ about the mother. It's just that she trusts people too easily because she's never experienced anything bad happen to her. You know, that character, she probably married into a rich family very young, led a very sheltered life under her parents, and never really struggled. I think you need to have something bad happen to you to start doubting people. She just never had that kind of thing happen to her. So really, it's about, like... the only thing that the rich people are really guilty of is just not being aware of, like, the privilege that they've had in their lives and not recognizing, like, the struggles
that people that are having people. Issues outside of their their little bubble. There's a couple of, like, metaphorical bits that are pretty like key on that, especially smell. That plays a big part in this movie. I guess I keep saying this, but a lot of the suspense hinges off just a few key elements, and one of them is smells, which is kind of weird. But it kind of creates a wall between the two families. I also was very amused at how the dad was so proud of his kids for being such great scam artists.
Yeah, that was really
that was pretty funny.
I mean, the movie is, like, largely it's very funny until it gets to a point where the lead family it's kind of hard when you can say the line is crossed, but at some point they definitely crossed the line.
Yeah. Did they cross the line, Joey?
Well, okay, but by the end, certainly you know.
No, I mean, there's a line that keeps being repeated about it. You can't cross the line.
Well, that's actually funny. Yeah, there is and that's actually a point against the Rich family. That line in particular is kind of highlights their elitism.
Although he was using it in a relatively reasonable circumstance when you're first thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then later on it comes off as more elitist.
Yeah. I mean, the basic point here is that this is a very, like, there's nothing subtle about the movie, but it's very nuanced. Like, there's so much, like...
And it's really interesting. Yeah. Like, this is a really unique premise, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen a movie quite like this, so
it's very unique.
I would say it's similar to other, I can't call them high concept, but like strong concept type movies, mm-hmm. like Cachet and stuff like that, and The Gift.
Oh yeah, sure.
Like these weird suspense movies about like high tension situations mm-hmm. between people.
Yeah, and I think Bong Joon-ho mentioned that he has one of his bigger influences is Hitchcock, and I think that's pretty clear. Like, you know, Hitchcock's thrillers kind of act in a similar kind of mode as this, but this is very
Hitchcock
unique.
Hitchcock makes a lot of these too.
So I mean, absolutely, everybody, you should go check this out because it's very nuanced and very interesting, and it makes me want to see it again just to see if there's anything I could pick up on that I didn't get the first time.
Yeah, some foreshadowing, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's tons of that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot. So.
Oh, yeah, I bet this is enough big twists that there has to be something in their first couple acts.
Yeah, I would think so, for sure. So, I mean, you know, I doubt I'll get the chance to see it while it's still in theaters, but I'm definitely looking forward to catching it maybe when it comes out on Blu-ray
VHS.
Or something. Or, yeah, VHS.
On VHS. Betamax.
Yeah, Betamax. Oh, yeah. Betamax tape. Are there any other like film formats that
LaserDisc?
It's
like the size of a record.
Yeah, we'll get it on
it's
LaserDisc.
Amazing.
That's what we'll do. We'll get Parasite on LaserDisc.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I can't. You know what? It's going to be very interesting to watch this movie at 1.5 times.
Oh yeah, that will be interesting. That'll be metaphorical in and of itself. For,
like then you really have to look for the symbolism.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we are going to finally be able to bring you a review of the new Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman. Connor's already seen it. Mark's already seen it. A lot of people I know in New York have already seen it. And the only bit of like stuff that they'll tell me about it is that they immediately want to see it again. So
I said that as the credits are rolling.
So that, you know, that's... Take that what you will, you know. But nonetheless, I'm extremely excited, and I can't wait to talk about it on the show. So we will see you next week for that historical episode it is bound to be.